Richard Holmes is an award-winning author of biographies of the great Romantic poets, Percy Bysshe Shelley and Samuel Taylor Coleridge. Holmes's new book is called The Age of Wonder, The Romantic Generation, and the Discovery of the Beauty and Terror of Science. In the book, Holmes explores the men and women who gave birth to the Romantic Age of Science at the end of the 18th century. He also traces the connections between art and science at this time. Holmes talked to Steve Paulson about the great astronomers William Herschel and his sister Carolyn, and how William's work as a musician influenced his work as a scientist.
There's a great deal of crossing over here. The ability to identify star patterns, which he becomes absolutely brilliant at, seems to have some relationship to his ability as a musician to compose complex contrapuntal music. And I go into this. He says himself that learning to look at stars is harder than playing a Haydn or a Handel fugue, all right? He makes that comparison. And later, when he's talking about his telescopes, he says, I have to tune them up like musical instruments to make them work well. So there's a constant crossover, I think, between his kind of self-discipline and his imaginative ability as a musician, and the same as an astronomer.
You also say that he could sight-read the sky like a
yes.
musician reads a score, and that was really his great gift. I mean, he learned the art of looking at the night sky.
Yes, I mean, one of the things he does is compose not simply a star map, but a map of all the double stars, which are very difficult to identify, a much more sophisticated map. When he started, about 100 of these were known. By the time he'd finished, about 2,000 were known. And he also starts identifying separate galaxies. We'll come into that. Let me just bring in Caroline, his sister, because she's a very important part of the story. She's the younger sister. She's bullied by the parents back home, particularly by her mother, incidentally, in Germany. The moment she's 21, William goes across to Germany, almost kidnaps her, brings her back to England, starts her on a new career as a musician, as a singer. She's a singer, he's a composer. But she, too, gets fascinated by astronomy and becomes his assistant, and indeed becomes a very gifted astronomer in her own right and discovers 8 new comets, a thing that gives her a reputation all over Europe. Together, first of all, they discover a new planet. This is Uranus. It's the 7th planet in our solar system.
And wasn't this the first planet to be discovered, the first new planet to be discovered in over 1,000 years?
Yes, it's since Ptolemy. I mean, it's the first modern planet, as it were. And his ability to spot that, because it's a question of using a telescope to see a very, very small object moving through the pattern of the fixed stars, there we touch on perhaps his gift as a musician as well as an astronomical observer, that he sees that there's something new out there. And this takes about a year for the European community to accept this, but then he becomes a famous, worldwide famous, really. He becomes a member of the Royal Society. The king, the English king, George III, gives him a scientific pension to build bigger and bigger telescopes. And incidentally, King also gives later Caroline, the sister, also a scientific pension, the first professional scientific pension for a woman, I think, anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've been talking about the links and connections between art and science, and again, that was very true with the discoveries of both William and Caroline Herschel, who, I mean, essentially, they realized that the universe was vastly bigger and older than anyone had thought before, and that it kept changing. And this apparently had a great impact on the musician Joseph Haydn, on the romantic poets Byron and Keats. I mean, they all created works of art that referred to the discoveries of the Herschels.
Yes, yeah, so let's just follow that through for a moment. Apart from discovering that new planet, using bigger and bigger telescopes, finally a 40-foot telescope, Herschel is the first person to establish, first of all, that we live in a galaxy which has its own form, the Milky Way, and he establishes for the first time the form of that, the famous slightly flattened discus, like 2 fried eggs back to back. That's the shape of our Milky Way. He's the first person to establish this in papers he sends to the Royal Society. But much more than that, he then establishes with the telescope that there are galaxies outside our Milky Way, for instance, Andromeda, our nearest galaxy. But the distances involved are inconceivable. No one had thought of the universe at this kind of scale. So it completely changes people's notion of, as it were, as a kind of intimate universe with the stars as a kind of convenient concave temple overhead. We're just a tiny fraction on the edge of a galaxy which itself is on the edge of something enormous and vast, vast, even difficult to imagine. And he also, in his late papers, he says, when we're looking into the night sky towards the other galaxies, we're also looking into the past. Very, very modern conception is, because the light has taken millions, in fact, we know billions of years to arrive at us, that the universe that we see is, in a sense, a ghost universe. It's the past universe. Now, these are ideas that are connected with 20th century astronomy, Edwin Hubble and Einstein, of course, but they're all there already in the papers of Herschel. And this had immense impact on writers. Take Shelley, for example, his first poem called Queen Mab, not a very scientific-sounding title, but it has prose notes attached to it. Very brilliant intellectual notes which look at various questions. And one is, what is the impact of Herschel's huge universe? And Shelley, being an atheist, says this shows that our notion of a biblical creation is completely wrong, that there must be out there thousands of other solar systems, presumably with kinds of civilization, in which case, where does the Christian religion fit into a universe of this size? Very radical, aggressive, atheist writing produced by the poet Shelley as notes to his poem Queen Mab. That's one way of that. Let's finish with Keats. Keats, of course, who was a later generation, but he read about the discovery of Uranus. And in probably his first major poem, that sonnet called On First Looking into Chapman's Homer, it's a poem about romantic discovery, and he compares his own discovery of the translations of the Homeric epic, which open a whole new field of literature to him, to two other discoveries. And one is the famous discovery of the Pacific by the conquistadors, and the other is, in fact, Herschel's discovery of the new planet, when some watcher of the skies, he describes it, sees a new planet swim into his ken. Wonderful line there, which I've slightly misquoted, but in that sonnet. And you can see that for Keats too, this has a huge impact, the notion of romantic discovery, new worlds. This runs right on through the writing of the period. Mm-hmm.
Let me bring the story up, not quite to the present, but to the 20th century, because there's been a lot of talk about the divide between science and the arts. Half a century ago, C.P. Snow delivered a famous lecture saying that they had become two separate cultures, unable to communicate with each other. Is the story that you have just told a refutation of Snow's two cultures argument?
This is a very interesting question. Yes, that two cultures lecture delivered, in fact, 50 years ago, it was delivered in 1959, I think it had a disastrous impact because it encouraged the nature of two cultures. And I think something now quite different is going on, and the reasons for it are complex. But broadly speaking, I think we are in, first of all, a great period of scientific writing and popular writing. One of the things that has happened, the universal concern about the future of the planet and climate change, the nature of energy resources and so on, have made scientific discourse much more broadly acceptable. Ordinary people, you and I, need to know about this, need to know the scientific data, as it were, on what's going on, and what are the plans for how do we handle this. And this, I think, has had a general impact on bringing together those two cultures. So the imaginative world is impinged upon by the scientific world, and also vice versa. And I think this is a new phenomenon. I think it's been going for maybe 15 or 20 years. And I think suddenly that two cultures seems very out of date. And what I've tried to do is say one way of healing that is to look at the history of science. And what I've written is a history of science in the Romantic period. And so many of the major themes about nature, sustainable planet, the question of the creation, we get on to the question of surgery, the human soul, all these big questions which are philosophic and scientific together, they are already raised in the Romantic period. So I'm trying to tell this, give a kind of a sounding board to what is now going on in contemporary culture. And that's, I think, one thing that history and biography can do. It says, hey, this has a story, an earlier story. Look at the people who are involved, look at their lives, and you will begin to get a handle on the kind of debates that are going on now. It's one of the reasons I wrote the book.
Richard Holmes is the author of The Age of Wonder, The Romantic Generation, and The Discovery of the Beauty and Terror of Science. He spoke with Steve Paulson.